Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colourful.com and apps. This is Colourful Radio.
The BBC will meet the Metropolitan Police today as the corporation deals with allegations that an unnamed presenter paid a teenager tens of thousands of pounds for sexually explicit images. As well as being in touch with the police, the BBC is carrying out its own inquiries and talking to the young person's family. Police say a man in China has killed six people in a knife attack at a kindergarten in southeast China. A 25-year-old man was arrested following the attack this morning in the Guangdong province. Ben Stokes has paid tribute to one of his recalled players after England's victory in the third Ashes test. While Chris Wokes and Mark Wood both took wickets and were at the crease when the three-wicket win was secured, Stokes also credited Moeen Ali, who removed key Australian batsmen in the game with his spin bowling.
You know, you look at that little spell yesterday with 15 minutes when he took the wickets of Marnus and Steve, that was a huge point in the game. That's like Mo as a cricketer, you know, you bring him into a team and you want him to be impactful with the ball and bat, and he certainly was with the ball this game.
From Radio News Hub, I'm Andy Hoyle.
Okay, that's six of the ragu and the linguine. Make a move, everyone, please.
The customers are rolling in at Stefano's new restaurant, so he needs another chef. Someone with a cool head and an appetite for success.
More flour in the bechamel, let's go.
Indeed can help him find great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. Sponsor a job on Indeed to unlock more tools that save you time and help you hire quality candidates. To start hiring, visit indeed.com/try today.
Coming up, metaphorically speaking.
Live on DAB Digital Radio, colourful.com and apps. This is Colourful Radio.
Boy told me we but I literally do the math. I was outside of my park by Tangi. Me or Spangy, the ops can't stand me. Cause I make cruise back. Just blew his hat. Bro's tryna can make all of them use one. But I was 16, that was me and my tree hat. Lord, bro, why you gonna do him that? Yo, we're the in the garden, parked off. Cap just ops can't send them back at the farm blocks. Ring like a alarm clock. Something going better. He would when the car stopped, bucked into AB. Crazy, he's driving, I know that his heart dropped. And the car was friends and a Bentley truck and the car's off. Go to the wrong with a. I send him up, mess him up, doctors dress him up. We put your minds in the air, go get him blood. So he chew over there, expect to run. Lord, bro's extra dumb, yep. Y'all dance, go. So don't forget your, bring an extra one. Bless the pub, yo. So I got 10 of my, get me mad and I rise on my jump up. Half man dashing off, run with his vest. Brody was waiting for gripped on his, went TP's like. How many have we had a lot, still got the left on the back of blocks. Yo, since she lost, so had all my damn mask on my face when I walk in that function. Feeling like Marky, back in 09, on my waist when I clap in more junction. Cause destruction for all of these punks, and see if you got, cause he caused obstruction.
My young boys getting straight back to your induction, turning link bad and he followed instructions.
Jam just left man miserable, S on his pinnacle, anti and digital. Who do I, the original, Izzy gets busy. Chat blending your car, you're still visible. Typical, with a boy, my boy is with it all shorter. You need to leave him, cause you're with a fool. Need a, not my dog from Liverpool. I told Glow Link me, you good. In case somebody try run on you. Long time I ain't stepped on a W. Get me mad, bring axe and double shoot. Fly out the right, try run, I'm a runner to. Gun run at you, ball dumb. Slim, one turn round, go the other you. Hook, love, blood at you, that's your. Put a dumb. Hack, laughing, had to, could've. Go on then, ask him. Man couldn't dare drive past him for anyone asking. We the ones pulling up, blacked out hoodies up. Over there, just charging, axe or missile. Better do high knees and be on the fasting. Pretty she buzz a lie, let man analyze. Tonight, I fantasize, get my mad at night. We'll step round there and guy, react quick like Danikaz. Are you the man and brass? You need to maximize. Cause if your panel snap, you better back your chat. Cause if I, I need some alibis. Put her in a lamb, we ain't going to eat. I'm taking her straight to the. Say hello to the king, I put my, put it straight in the whip. 20 gallon and they love, come a cake in the install road. Taking a risk, I ain't taking a diss, I silly. I told Glow Link me, you good. In case somebody try run on you. Long time I ain't stepped on a W. Get me mad, bring axe and double shoot. Fly out that right, try run, I'm a runner to you. Gun run at you, ball dumb. Slim, one turn round, go the other you. Boot love, that's your.
Colorful radio.
I'll take you.
Colourful.
Delia. Delore.
Colourful Radio.
Hello and welcome to Metaphorically Speaking with Delia Delore. On your bike. No, not you. That's what my mother told me when I asked her once, a very long time ago, if I could go out with someone. Well, this is what Metaphorically Speaking is all about. It's about those popular terms, quotes and metaphors that we use mostly every day. Sometimes we're not even aware of how often we use them. But using them and understanding where they came from is another thing. And we hope you'll join us every week to explore a new metaphor. This week's metaphor is children should be seen and not heard. I know you've heard that many times, and probably you found yourself saying it to your children and hearing your children saying it to their children too. Today I'll be speaking with stylist Denise Brown on how the phrase has influenced her life. She grew up under harrowing circumstances and used the phrase to make her stronger. But before I talk to Denise, let's find out where this phrase comes from. Children should be seen and not heard is actually an extremely old English proverb that many of us feel is outdated. Depends on your culture. Well, it does for me. The idiom dates back to the 15th century and was originally used in reference to women. It was quoted then as, "A maid should be seen but not heard." This form of the phrase was first found in a collection of homilies written by Augustinian clergyman John Merck. At this time and place in history, women were commonly regarded as second-class citizens due to biblical narratives formed by the church. Though there are various examples of influential pious ladies in the holy text, like Jesus' mother Mary of Nazareth, the idea of religious female leaders were often contested by various instances of impurity, qualities that were not necessarily lacking from their male counterparts. We may think of Jezebel, her name having become a moniker for overly sexualized and brutish women, or Eve, mother to the original sin. It seemed that for a woman to make her mark in this patriarchal society, she would have to act the part. After reporting some kind of series of holy visions, her fame could come cemented in society. Maybe the most well-known example of this is French heroine Joan of Arc, who indeed became canonized by the church after reporting revelations of various saints. Looking back to Britain, Dame Julian of Norwich, author, mystic and visionary, rose to fame after penning the Revelations of Divine Love. This is the earliest surviving book written by a woman in English. In this text, Dame Julian recorded her near-death experience with a serious illness. After having her last rites read to her, she claimed to have witnessed a series of apparitions from God. She likened the love of God to that of a mother, stating that our Saviour is our true mother, whom we are endlessly born and out of whom we shall never come. The idea that God could be a woman was a completely new idea at the time and is certainly an empowering thought, which has cemented Dame Julian of Norwich as an early feminist figure. It is much later on that the proverb, "A maid should be seen but not heard," turned its focus solely onto children. If we think about a toddler tantrum or the never-ending bickering between two siblings, we could surely think this phrase has some veracity. But there is no denying the impacts that certain youths have had within local and global society. Lewis Braille, a child who could not see, pioneered methods of communication within the blind society. I'm sure you knew that. Inspired by night writing, a tactic used by the French army at the time, Braille created a unique code consisting of six dots that could be printed to the size of a fingertip. By the age of 15, he had invented a tactile alphabet, which he then later adapted for both music and mathematics. This system is now widely used by the visually impaired community and has been adapted for use in modern technologies such as mobile phones. The innocence of children can be one of their strongest tools when facing an injustice in the world. It allows for a way to find focus and create a drive to fix the issue. Adults, having witnessed at least 18 years of hate, unfairness, and bureaucracy, become downtrodden by the system. Mounting responsibilities force us to tunnel our visions, forgetting about the bigger picture. And there are plenty of examples of juvenile activists, from the outspoken Malala Yousafzai to the headstrong Greta Thunberg. A child who has already paved the way for future generations was Claudette Colvin, the inspiration for Rosa Parks herself. In 1955, at the age of 15, on a ride home from high school, Colvin was told by the bus driver to give up her seat to a white passenger. She refused, saying that she had paid her fare and it was her constitutional right to sit there. Colvin had been learning about important figures in Black American history in school, along with discussing her own experiences with her class.
When the news reporters asked me, why didn't I get up? I said, history had me glued to the seat. I said, it felt as though Harriet Tubman's hand was pushing me down on one shoulder, and Sojourner Truth's hand was pushing me down on another shoulder. And between these two historical women, iconic women, I could not move. I was paralyzed in that seat.
Colvin was soon arrested by two police officers and remembers once she heard the jail door close behind her, the gravitas of her actions really hit her. The proverb, children should be seen and not heard, is not a phrase that reflects society particularly honestly. With the advent of movies and in turn viral videos, countless clips of amusing children have cemented themselves into our hearts. Whether it be their inability to pronounce words correctly or their innocent shamelessness, the antics of a small human warms many a heart. In fact, the first child star, the singing and dancing Shirley Temple, you know her, right? She was known exactly for this. Her blonde curls and adorable dimples lifted the spirits of many Americans during the Great Depression. Even President Roosevelt stated that, as long as our country has Shirley Temple, we will be all right. Temple's career ended at the age of 22 when she had truly outgrown her cuteness, which shows that sometimes we do really want children only to be seen and heard.
With a very good reason why. I've no one to be gay with, that's why I wear a frown. No children I can play with, London Bridge is falling down, not the lady.
Because of the cultural attitudes that birthed this phrase, many people have had to fight to be heard. But demanding representation and breaking glass ceilings is something my guest this week, fashionista Denise Brown, is all too familiar with. Hi, Denise. Welcome to Metaphorically Speaking.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. And I'm really excited to talk to you because you are coming from a background and areas that a lot of people are in their own way. But the difference is you've managed to turn your life around to be the place you would like it to be at this place and time, because things change. You know, you may want to change it at another stage, but right now you seem to be in a really good place. So tell us about Denise Brown. Who are you?
Hi guys, I'm Denise Brown. I'm a freelance fashion stylist, a teacher, and I'm a speaker.
Okay, and tell us about I know that you say that you're a teacher and I know that you motivate people, but what's different about the way that you motivate people? Because, you know, there's so many people doing that in, you know, in these days. What makes your motivational talks any different from the rest?
Well, what makes my motivational talks different is that, I mean, I have my presentation because I'm originally a fashion stylist, so I get to show like my journey from the beginning to the end. My story is it's quite deep. So I speak about, because I've come from a troubled background and, you know, growing up, my mum was a drug dealer and she taught me how to sell drugs from 8 years old. And when I was younger, my dream was either to become a fashion stylist or a drug dealer. My dream was actually to become a fashion designer or a drug dealer. So if the designing didn't work, I was going to be one of the biggest drug dealers like my mum. So, and also I think it's more to do with my personality and how I captivate the people than the audience, because with all the images that I've styled, and then people, you know, people, they, you know, they're in awe and they're really amazed by my story, because I've styled like loads of celebrities that, you know, there's somebody in the crowd that actually knows one of the celebrities that I've styled. So that's what makes me unique. So I'm not just talking about I'm coming from a travel background. It's that I found fashion and it changed my life. Where a lot of speakers, they have this, you know, they talk about, you know, they're coming from a travel background, but their whole job is just to motivate others. I mean, my whole story is to motivate people, but at the same time, teach them what I know, how to become a fashion stylist like myself.
How can you remain so positive coming from the background that you are in? Because it's no secret, coming from those types of backgrounds, people tend to be really tough. And parenting was very strict in those days. It's more strict than it is now. So how do you maintain that bubbly personality throughout it all?
You know, it is. I think it's just something that I've got instilled in my family, because I'm a Brown, my auntie's an actress, my granddad was a crazy, you know, bubbly personality. He's always had, used to have parties every week, always celebrating who he is. My mother, even though she kind of like failed at a certain time, she's always had, my mum's got a big personality. So it's just something that I've learned, like, you know, had to learn how to hold things in, but at the same time, you never see it because I'm always smiling. So that's something that I've kind of like learned from a child.
Yeah, but you know, that is a recipe for disaster in terms of depression.
I know, it's true.
Did you suffer any of that depression, anxiety, anything like that?
I actually suffer from anxiety now. It's crazy. I get anxious all the time. So what it is, if I'm doing something, so if I'm styling someone, I'm like, oh my God, I've got to make sure I've got enough clothes. I've got to make sure that it's right. I can't sleep. Even when I have interviews, it's like, oh my gosh, I make sure I've got to say something. You know, I've got to say the right things. And depression, I went through depression about 5-6 years ago, and it was for a long time. And I had to end up seeing a counsellor, because growing up, I was depressed. But because I had fashion, it was just like a cover. It was covering up how I felt within, and I started to make clothes from expressing it into creativity. But there was a time when I wasn't okay, about over 5 years ago. I had a moment when I was like, you know what, I can't cope. So I made a phone call to my mum. She had issues as usual. My friends also had issues. I had to speak to my doctor, and then I started to see a counsellor. So I've been getting counselling for over 5 years.
Now, you know, a lot of people, they shun counselling. They think that, you know, you just, for you to do that, it really means that you're not, it's not even about getting it together. They look at it as a mental unwellness. Mm. Now, I know for a fact that, you know, I have lots of friends who are counsellors, and I do. I myself get counselled, because I think that we need to have that balance, you know. But at the time when you were going through things, did you know exactly what it was that was making you feel that way? Was it a combination of you wanted to have a career that you haven't, or was it just a personal because of the way that you had been brought up?
Everything. Do you know what happened to me? So So what happened, I got accustomed from a young child up to adulthood how to deal with problems. There's never been a time when I've never had problems. So all I'm styling all these celebrities is always issues, because my mother became a drug addict when I was young. So I was like 13, and then it's carried all the way through until like maybe about 6 years ago she stopped. And so it's just something that I've always used to deal, like I've always dealt with. But it came a moment, yeah, my career, it was through my career. I want to be a teacher. I was working for this company. I showed them, so basically I did a pilot for them, how to be a fashion designer, because I can sew as well, make clothes for these kids who are needs, who's not in education, unemployed. They took away the course, they made it into their own, they hired another tutor. So they were like, oh, you're not qualified. So I went and I need to pass my qualification. Did the first year PGCE, got depressed, because I was like, oh my gosh, I can't do the work at home. I just couldn't do the work. And at the same time, I was working for this magazine, they were using my name, getting clothes. I'm the fashion editor, but then they are hiring other people to do my job without telling me. And it's just a combination of feeling like I just felt devalued as a person. So I had the problems with that. Then I got a son, he was getting into trouble, going through his crazy moments. So it's like, I just couldn't cope. So that's how it started off. And then all my childhood came back.
Yes,
as well.
You know, all the childhood that you had, you got that together as a child, but yet as an adult, when you were on roads to success, instead of saying, you know, saying, okay, I don't care, you've done this to me, I'm going to show you, it just made you, it just deflated you, you know, from what
yes.
you're saying. You know, that's how it felt. And yet you had such a, you know, a bubbly personality.
Yeah, it came to that.
Can you remember the time that you felt, you know what, I need help? You know, was there a specific moment that you just sat there and you thought, I need help?
Yeah, that was the time when I did my teacher's qualification and I just couldn't cope with the work. I couldn't cope the magazine that I was working for, and then the job, all three combinations, and then realizing that my mom's not here for me. I've got no one here for me. It's like I'm the mother. I'm always the go-to person. Oh, I feel depressed. Let me talk to Denise, like my friends, and my mum has always been leaning on me. And then I just thought, you know what? I've had enough. I can't do this no more. I need help. Because you're right. I didn't want to see a counsellor before, because I was like, oh my God, I don't want to see no counsellor. What are they going to say to me? They don't know me. Yeah. And I needed a counsellor that I can relate to as well, someone that kind of understands me. But thankfully, I got someone like that. It's been incredible. It's been one of the best things that I've done in my life as
Great.
Well. Getting counselling.
Your love for fashion.
So I was 11 years old. So my mum's friend used to go to Ghana, and she used to bring back these amazing cloths. And I was really into hip hop. I was into like Salt and Pepper, Queen Latifah, you know, Run DMC, and KRS-One. And Queen Latifah at that time, she was wearing the African gowns, the hats, and then. I said, you know what, I'm going to make one of them. So I practiced, I got cardboard, stuck it, put the round bit, and I put the fabric over and hand-stitched it. And I made an African gown. And my cousin was going to a hip-hop rave in Kilburn, DJ Mark Cross. And he was like, well, he still is. He's really big in the game. And I remember Karen Wheeler, you know, what's his name? Back to life. Yes, so the two dancers,
yes.
Dean and Hudson, they were going to be... I was like, oh, my God, because I used to fancy them. So my cousin invited me, and I was like, oh, my God. Yeah, I went there, and everybody loved my outfit. They couldn't believe someone my age that made that. So my cousin was acting like she's my manager now. But then from then, everybody was like, I want you to make me this, I want you to make me that, and then my mum's friends, and then my friends. And I started to get a name from Kilburn. Denise is a fashion designer.
And so how do you move from then... the fashion designer, the local fashion designer, to dressing celebrities? How did that happen?
Do you know what? What happened was, when I was really young, I started to discover Versace at 13 years old. That's when I saw Naomi Campbell. I was like, who's this beautiful black model? Oh my gosh, she's so gorgeous. And I used to love, because I used to do a lot of gold embellishments and, you know, like jewelry. And my music started to change. I started to be into fashion at that time. So I used to make a lot of clothes and go out with my friends. But what happened was, I always used to think in my head, I'm going to be the next Versace. Nobody could tell me nothing. I'm going to be the Versace. But when I left school with no GCSEs, that's when I realised, because I wanted to get into London College of Fashion, I didn't get in there. But eventually I worked my way up and went to London College of Fashion when I was like 21. By then I was a mother, had my son. And then when I went to London College of Fashion, it wasn't really for me. I didn't fit in. You need money to be a fashion designer. You need to do your collections. You need money for Fashion Week. I didn't have that. I was different from all the students. Young single mother, you know, London College of Fashion's got middle class, rich people. They don't talk to you, the students. If you're not there one day, no one's not going to tell you what's happening. Competition is crazy. So I said, you know what? I don't want to do designing. So I decided to be a fashion stylist, but I had to start from the bottom. And I sent a gift box to Black Hair and Beauty magazine. That's how I started to get the attention, because I thought, if I send a gift box, then they're going to think it's a gift. So I sent it to Denise Douglas, and then she did the makeovers and went from then on, worked with a stylist called Franklin Aconsetti, Cynthia Lawrence John, one of the biggest black stylists in this country. And I learned from her from the bottom. So I did that for like 3 years in total. Stylist assistant, and then I learned to become a fashion stylist.
All right, so name us some of the people that you have styled.
So I've worked with Ed Sheeran, Rihanna, Kanye West, T.I., Tiny Temper, Ashley Waters.
Oh wow, you're fucking up there.
Yeah, I've worked with like loads of old school people, like, you know, like the Noisettes, and so I've got like in my portfolio, it's a I've got a variety of work. So I've got a lot of I do a lot of editorials for like Vogue Cafe, Style Noir. So I've got like editorials of models of different race and menswear as well, and then I've got the celebrities as well. So
it's very, very actually dressing a celebrity. Maybe it's not something that, you know, all you wanted to do was be a fashion stylist and just wanted people to know that you could do these things. But when you're standing in front of someone who you have admired, or, you know, you love what they do, and you're dressing them, can you remember that kind of first time, who that yeah. person was that you thought, oh my gosh?
Do you know what? I felt like that when I styled Rihanna. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. I didn't tell anyone that I was going to do it, because I never tend to tell people my business. I want to do the job, then once it's done, then say it. And also Cassie, I was like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe I'm here. But I learned about how to style celebrities, because I used to work with a celebrity stylist. So she was doing like Mystique, Samantha Mumba, Macy Gray, Nelly Furtado, Alicia Keys. And so I started to get used to seeing like people in the building. Like when we did like the Brits, you see Usher, then you see Nelly, you see all these people. It's like, oh my goodness. She's like, Denise, don't, you know what I mean? She
did you ever freak out and you couldn't keep it in and went up to someone and said, yes, I really wanted to meet you?
When I saw Usher, yeah, I saw Usher, I was like, oh my god, Usher, can I take a picture of you? I was so excited. And I saw Nelly and Alicia Keys, and she pulled me up. She was like, Denise, you can't be doing that. You can't be unprofessional. So I got trained. So whenever I saw the celebrity, do you know what? I saw Kelly Rowland, and she invited me and my sister for dinner. And it was only based on because I styled a band, what's their name? Big Brothers, years ago. And I started to customize them their skirts. And then Kelly Rowland was there. She was like, oh my God, I love that skirt. Got a little link. Then she invited me, and I couldn't believe it. Me and my sister was looking at her like, is this for real? But we still had to remain professional, and I made her a skirt and I gave it to her. I've always had to, but I've had loads of their moments when I'm excited. Even when I started T.I., I was so excited. I was like, oh my god, he's so good looking, look at T.I.
So when you go out and you do your motivational speaking, I'm sure that you touch on some of these things, but you know, what is the main gist of your motivation, you know, your motivational speaking? What is it that you want people to come out and understand?
I just want them to understand that it doesn't really matter who you are, where you come from. You can start from nothing, or you can even start from coming from a troubled background. It's how much passion you've got and how much work you are willing to do to become the person that you want to be, like, so whatever dreams you have. Because when I used to say to people, I'm going to be this, people used to look at me like, really? You ain't going to be nothing, because, you know, your mum's on drugs. Like, your mum's in Kilburn High Road. I'm selling to your mum. Like, I've had times when people didn't want to date me because they knew my mum, who my mum was. It was crazy. So my mum came from being that beautiful, stunning drug dealer to becoming, you know, the opposite. And that's what I want to be able to do, inspire people that they can be whoever they want to be. It doesn't matter who you are, where you come from. It's all about putting in that hardcore work and being motivated and being focused. So that's what I want to put out there.
What's the relationship with your mom like now?
Do you know what, it's crazy though. At the moment, it's always up and down, because it's me and my sister, we're 11 months apart, and then I've got a 27 year old sister and a 19 year old sister, and she's done the same. It's like different generations you've kind of messed up on. So I have to pick up the pieces for my sisters. And she doesn't know, I just think she's got a problem with knowing how to just show it, like showing love. And she's still on that little kids, but must be seen and not heard. Because when my sister tries to speak to her, like, mom, I need to speak to you, this is how I'm feeling, she's like, no, you know, like, don't speak to me, go in your room. And she's got that very aggressive, because she's Jamaican and she was born in Jamaica, but she was raised from her grandma, so she's got her grandma in her, because it's not like it's her mum, it's like the older generation. Yes. So yes. She doesn't know how to show us that kind of affection up to date. And it's just that story of, she came here at 15, her mother sent her at 15, she didn't know her family, she didn't know her mum and her dad. She came in, she's six sisters, and she didn't get to know them. And by the time she was 16, she got pregnant. So, and she didn't feel loved from her mum. And then it's gone on to the generation now, because she wasn't got shown love, she doesn't know how to show us love. And so that's, I mean, so that's what the problem is. But we're not really, we're not really tired.
Yeah, but how do you how do you show your mom love after everything that you've been, you know, been through? She was responsible for your the way you were brought up. How does she feel about you talking about her like this?
Do you know what? She threatens me. She's like, I had you talking about me, my friend told me. And then she turns around and says, Denise, why don't you write a book about my life? And I want you to, she wants me to write the book. Mm. And then she would get half. I said, yeah, we can do that. She's a character. If you met her, you'd be, you would love her. She's crazy. Like, she's like so loud and bubbly. She's like, if we went out, when we go out, she's the only one that's dancing in the room. She dresses, she's a wicked dresser. She's petite, like 5 foot. Mm. She dresses up in her hats, her scarves, her this. She's very well kept. Yes. But, I still love, do you know what, I've always loved my mum. You know what my main goal was in life? To do what I'm doing to help my mum. I didn't even think about myself. I didn't even think about my son. My main goal in my life is that I need to work hard so I can help my mum. I want to send her to rehab.
Did that stop her doing what she was doing? Do you not think she just enjoyed what she did? You thought that she needed to do it to survive?
Do you know what it was? It was crazy, because when I was younger, I couldn't see it. It's only since I got counselling, you know, that's when I started to realise and got to know about who I am and why I've got bad habits. Because these habits that I've learned from a child, I've brought it into my adulthood. I've brought it into my relationships. I'm always trying to fix people. Oh, don't worry, I can help you. Friends, everything. And I always will love my mum unconditionally. Like my sister, who's 1 year younger than me, she's not talking to us. She's not talking to my mum. She's going around talking her thing, her truth. And she's not talking. And my mum doesn't understand. She's like, oh, why is she talking about... Mum, you know, this is what you done. You did treat her different from me because she looks like our dad. So she got it more than me. Yeah. And but she's very ignorant. That's the problem. She's ignorant and she doesn't want to sit down and listen. I even got my mum into counselling. I paid for it. I said, Mum, I'm going to pay for you 6 sessions and then we can do like together and we can get a mediator. I don't want no mediator. Do you know what I mean? So she doesn't want to try and heal on that side. It's just one of them things. She didn't get love. So I think, I'm not even think, I know her whole vision, her whole plan in life is that she wants to be loved from a man. That's what she's about. Yeah, she's in a situation, she's not happy, and we've been arguing over that situation. And I feel like her mum again, because she's phoning me like, Denise, you know what happened? And I'm like, do you have any friends?
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to hear this about my mum. I want to hear that because me and her are 17 years apart now. We're friends now. We're not, I mean, obviously she's my mum, but we're like friends. I've got friends her age. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, we're like mates. So I'm like, can you talk to me about something else? Can you, why? And I say, Mum, why are you like this? Since I've known you, you've always been going after the wrong men and you're so beautiful. But I would always love my mum, regardless. Mm. If I make money.
Yes.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. I think I've got a good gist of, you know, who you are and how you were brought up and what you're doing right now. But if we look at society as a whole, we have a responsibility as adults, as parents, to ensure that our young people develop a maturity and maybe ambition is the word I'm looking for. Ambition. We have that responsibility because we don't want them to be brought up the way that we were. And when I say we were, I mean most of us, whether we were in abusive with abusive families or unfortunate happenings, it's different. Life then is different. And now we really do need to come together to say that our lives are worth something and that we can achieve the things that we would like to. And we have to find those avenues. Because it's one thing knowing I want to do this, but you have to be able to know how to access it and then be able to access it when you know where to go. Do you think that our support systems in the UK is adequate enough to bring up our children and to bring up even, you know, a 40, 50 year old can say, I actually want to change direction now, especially, you know, with what's been happening with COVID and everything. A lot of people have been forced to change direction.
Would you definitely say
that our society has places or is looking out for us?
Not really. Do you know what? I mean, if you say us as people, I'm not really, because there's not really, it's always been hard for you know, people of our complexion. It's really, but nowadays, the only thing I can say, which is great since COVID, is that people are now doing more Zoom courses. They got online courses with Udemy, YouTube videos now. A lot of people now are doing YouTube videos. So if a woman who's like in her 40s, 50s say, look, I want to change my career, because I get, like, when I was teaching how to be a stylist workshops, events, I got lawyers and doctors saying, I want to be a stylist. I'm like, okay. And is it too late? I'm like, no, nothing's too late. For when you're living and you're healthy, you can always turn around and change your career. There is more access online, and there is more, people can more put themselves out there, but they have to have that confidence to, like, if you want to speak about, you know, they can speak about their expertise, whatever their, you know, whatever they do. I mean, sorry, whatever their profession is, or they can learn it. But it's more about just, you know, coming out of your comfort zone, looking on YouTube. If there's a specific person that you want to learn from, reaching out to them, say, look, do you offer Zoom classes? Or, yeah, going on Udemy, learning new things. But as a, you know, like, as a support system, it's still hard. Yeah, because there's not a lot of people, like a lot of us, we're not supporting each other. So that's what, and it's always going to be like that for a long time.
So how do people reach out to you, Denise?
If you can, so my Instagram is Denise Brown Stylist, and I've also, my website will be up and running ending of next month or beginning of December. So it'd be denisebrownstylist.com. My Facebook is Denise Brown Stylist, and my email address is, at the moment, it's Denise Brown Fashion Stylist at gmail.com. So I offer, like, I'm going to be doing Zoom meetings. So if you want to learn how to be a stylist, or if you want, you know, personal shopping, I can do that on Zoom. I'm also going to be doing, what else am I going to be doing? Sorry, my book's coming out in February.
Yes, tell us briefly about your book.
So I've decided, do you know what? I did an event a few years ago. It was in a hip hop cafe in Willesden. And then someone said to me, okay, what are you selling? And I wasn't selling anything. I just did it so I could boost up my confidence. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know what? I need to do like a book guide and teach. So whenever I do an event, or if I go and do a talk, I've got a book guide and I can say, look, guys, I'm selling this. If you want to learn how to be a stylist. So I put together a book, and in the end, I put together some all the experience and everything that I have. And now it's become a book. So it's just teaching people how to be a stylist in my way. It's got motivation. So it's got, you know, like, information, like, before you become a stylist, number one, you need to know who you are. You need to believe in yourself, because in this game, if you don't know who you are, you're going to end up not doing, and not even, you might just say, look, I don't want to do this no more. Because I've had, especially young black females, I've mentored young black females, and they've given up. They said, you know what, I don't want to do this, it's too hard. Because people don't understand that you have to start from the bottom. You might have to work for a stylist that you don't like. She might not say hello. She might just, like, go over there and go, do you know what I mean? I had to do that. Yeah. And so it's like, it's just got real life stories about stuff where I was outside waiting for 2 hours for the stylist to come out.
Denise, if anyone wants to contact you, how do they do that?
So if you can contact me at, my Insta is Denise Brown Stylist, and my Facebook is Denise Brown Stylist. If they can email me at denisebrownfashionstylist@gmail.com. Website will be up and running in a couple of months.
Well, Denise, all I can say is that you have tremendous tenacity. You are vibrant. You've just kept on going. And I know there's plenty more coming out from you. So thank you so much for being a guest with us. And of course, I wish you and your family all the best.
Do idioms shape nations? And if so, how? From social expectations to autonomy and different parenting styles, this week's saying really gives you an insight into perceptions of children around the world. Here in the UK, it seems that most people can recall a time where they were fed this old adage.
Listen, you little wiseacre. I'm smart, you're dumb. I'm big, you're little. I'm right, you're wrong. And there's nothing you can do about it.
Things may have changed, of course. These days, our children seem more outspoken than ever, with the likes of Super Nanny Jo Frost actively giving children a voice.
I really wanted to focus now on the lack of communication between Gen Z and the two older kids.
This is my little technique for this afternoon. It's from the heart. It's really just you getting an insight of your kids' hearts and what they've been feeling and what they've been thinking, and just having more of an understanding. And I can't stress enough how important it is to keep communication solid.
Which, to be honest, is probably what led us to this.
No, I want my bacon. I gotta tell you something. Bacon is good for me.
But jokes aside, is this idea that children should be seen and not heard is unfortunately still a popular attitude around the world today? Japan is even known for its social cohesion and incredibly well-behaved children who seem to embody the motto despite the fact that there's actually no true equivalent of it in Japanese. For their first 2 years, a Japanese child is attached to their mother at all times. They spend so much time together, skin to skin, the mother essentially develops the knack for telepathically anticipating her child's every need. It makes sense then that in studies comparing Japanese and Western children, Japanese babies have been found to silently wait until their mom figures out what they want, while Western babies will typically cry. So from birth, Japanese children are hardwired to see themselves and their actions as intrinsically linked to others, which aligns with the Japanese mentality to always think of others. But as idealistic as this sounds, there is a flip side. It tends to curtail self-expression, and this is where Japan's manifestation of children should be seen and not heard emerges. The nail that sticks up will be hammered down. In Japan, standing out is usually met with resistance, which links to our metaphor this week, because it exists as a manifestation of silencing children to silencing everyone. Here's a snippet from a TED talk by Kanko Moritaka, who relates her experience of being an outspoken child in Japan.
Let me talk about my experience where I feel like the nails are stuck out in the hammering. When I was an elementary school student in fourth grade, I experienced these ideas for the first time. I was an outspoken student and I could do whatever I wanted. When my teacher asked questions, I always raised hand and I want to answer every question. But I noticed some students started to ignore me and started calling me teacher's pet. They told me I'm different from them. You are not my friend, they said. I was shocked. I still had hope because I had friends. But my friends didn't do anything for me. They didn't want to be the next target of bullying. The bullying started to spread many people to people, and even started spreading many rumors. Eventually, I became very quiet and afraid to speak up. I was a nail that stuck out and got hammered in.
Another way we can look at this proverb is through the metaphorical parent-child relationship that autocratic leaders have with their subjects. The expectation that citizens under a dictatorship should unquestioningly accept unearned authority very much evokes the image of powerless children who are denied the right to self-discovery and expression. On this note, Stalin even said, "Ideas are far more powerful than guns. We don't let our people have guns. Why should we let them have ideas?" During his dictatorship that lasted over 3 decades, the people of the Soviet Union were denied access to information and punished for speaking out against his authority, effectively ridding the population of undesirable thoughts as they had no exposure to them, which the USA at the time agreed with. Using heavy restrictions on media and news coverage to communicate to the public that communism was an evil, while also arresting those who identified as communist or even own any literature written by the economist Karl Marx. But enough of that doom and gloom, okay? Let's travel now to a place where the approach to children couldn't be more different. The year is 1945, and a red-haired, freckled young girl with upside-down braids and enough strength to lift a horse is capturing the hearts and minds of Sweden's youth. Pippi Longstockings, for those of you who don't know, is the eponymous character of a Swedish children's book about a young orphaned girl who defied societal norms. Pippi is a playful, unpredictable child who loves making fun of unreasonable adults. Her anti-authoritarian nature has caused a lot of debate since her creation and was even censored in France. In post-war France, there was actually a law that stated children's fiction could not depict negative traits like lying and stealing in a positive light. So in Pippi Longstocking's French translation, one third of the story was omitted, and the description of her as a strange, maladjusted child was changed to describe her as a fine young lady who, instead of lifting a horse, lifted a pony. But obviously, that's way more realistic, right? Even today, French parents take Children Should Be Seen and Not Heard pretty seriously. Maybe that's why the book never really did take off, even after a more faithful version was released in 1995. It is probably worth mentioning that Sweden is considered one of the best countries in the world to raise a child. It is home to one of the most outspoken 17-year-olds on the planet, Greta Thunberg, and was the first country in the world to ban the corporal punishment of children in 1958. It makes sense, then, that the Swedish say, children do as you do, not as you say. Sweden's endorsement of outspoken children really makes you wonder if the first time Greta Thunberg ever heard someone say, children should be seen and not heard, was when she was thrust into the international spotlight. During the show, I think we've seen that children should be seen and not heard has been used to silence voices who were brave enough to point out that their current situations could be better. But those in power gained their power using the current systems, so are typically resistant to voices of change. But I think Greta Thunberg said it best. She said, "The eyes of all future generations are upon you, and if you fail us, I say we will never forgive you." Speech is how we communicate our ideas to our peers. Ideas are power, and I think those who inherit this planet deserve their ideas to be heard. Don't you? Thank you for listening to Metaphorically Speaking with Delia Delore. I really hope that you had a chance to think about our phrase, children should be seen and not heard, and perhaps remember some of the funny times that it was used for you too. If you'd like to suggest a metaphor for an upcoming show, you can reach us at msdelia@deliadelore.com. Next week's metaphor is, life is a marathon, not a sprint. So let us know your interpretations on our Facebook and Instagram at Metaphorically Speaking with Delia Delore. Until then, I wish you all...
colourful,
Delia Delore,
on Colourful Radio.
Boy, it's a shame.